At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome, guys. Oh my goodness, we got a lot going on in the U.S. of A. Happy Election Day to all of you. Unlike people that will tell you all of you should get out there and vote, I hope a lot of you disenfranchised, uninterested dum-dums that didn't want to vote didn't vote. We actually really don't need you filling out that form like a kid running out of time on an SAT. I'm glad if you stayed home. But for the rest of you, I'm going to keep you entertained. And you know what? Coming up on today's show, Tom Aspinall laid out his plans for UFC 309. Plus, I'm going to tell you why Ilya Topuria may be a champion for many years to come. We even have some news to get to in today's program. In fact, you know what? Let's begin with that. Joaquin Buckley is taking on Ian Garry. Now, that is interesting for a lot of reasons. That is a great booking, and that took real courage by the UFC, by the way. They have a star in Ian Garry, and they're going to put his undefeated record, his handsome look, his ability to draw against a guy who is none of those things. And before you think I'm insulting Buckley, I'm not. This is an incredible opportunity from Buckley, and he can take all of those things. He can have all those things that I just said he doesn't have, because in this sport, you got all your chips in at all times. Whatever you have is on the table. But they don't overleave Bob Buckley over there. Buckley isn't always pleasant to be around. He understands to make an egg. Make an omelet, you got to crack a few eggs. He's gone after Daniel Cormier, the beloved. I think he called Daniel a hoe, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, wow. What a difference a day can make with Buckley. If Buckley goes out and gets the jump on Ian Garry, oh, by the way, if he doesn't, I have a feeling the crowd is going to be on Ian Gary's side. And if anything I just said there sounded like I was insulting Buckley, I might have said it wrong. I kind of heard my own ears there, too. It's not. It's just an incredible thing that I believe the crowd is going to want Buckley to lose. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. Buckley just got a knockout over a guy who never gets hit. Oh, finding Wonder Boy would be such a pain in the ass. Oh, you can't find him. You can't find him. You might protect yourself. Maybe he'll stay away and he doesn't find you. You can't find him. Buckley found him. And Buckley can wrestle. And Buckley did not throw a wild shot that landed on Wonder Boy. He set that up. The form was there. Everything was tight. That's why the power was there. That's why he succeeded. Like, I'm just saying, I don't know that we fully understand how good Buckley is. But, Ian Garry also showed us in his last fight that he's got another dimension. Ian Garry stayed on the ground in a dominant position for a meaningful amount of the fight. He had the crowd oohing and on that he might even be able to finish the fight with a submission hold. Like, it's one of those things, and I always get a kick out of that. I really do get a little bit of a thrill as a fan when I see a guy that I think I've got figured out, and it turns out that he's polished in an area that he never showed us. And I feel like both of these guys had their big coming out party for that. The word is now out on Buckley. Nobody's going to play with Buckley on his feet. And he's shown moments of brilliance, by the way. I'm not acting as though Buckley hasn't. He's shown to be a very dangerous guy. But you have to have a very high IQ. You have to have a very good comfortability and understanding of the sport to get to those positions successfully against Wonder Boy. So if you could do it to Wonder Boy, you could do it to Garrick. There's my point. There, out with it. If he can do that to Wonder Boy, he can do it to Gary. And I don't question that Buckley can out-grapple Gary, but that doesn't mean I'm right. Gary's a son of a bitch to take down. When's the last time you've seen Gary taken down? Try never. That's the answer. That is your answer. When's the last time that you saw Gary really having to out-wrestle somebody? He was under attack. He was under pursuit from wrestling. He really had to defend it. You have seen that, but you've only seen that twice. And I bring that to you because Gary does something. Sean O'Malley's another guy, much like Gary, that understands range, has the right footwork, and offers enough threats up the middle that guys don't close the distance and try to attack. He can just stop guys wrestling by the threat that he's offering. I've watched Sean. I've been trying to figure out what he's doing. What is he doing to keep everybody back? But Gary's that same way. And Gary does have a few tells. There are a few things within Gary's game that he will always do. Chuck Liddell had one. Chuck was a stud, is why I bring him up. Like, there's only a few guys ever that were actually the best in the world. You got a whole bunch of world champions. You got world champions right now that aren't the best, aren't even believed to be the best in the world. And I don't say that to be a jerk. I say that to celebrate the few who at a point in time proved, and the industry itself agreed with the fact that they were truly the best in the world. And Chuck is one of those guys. Chuck had his period of time. There wasn't a man out there he couldn't beat. So there was a professional wrestler named Mark Merrow. And Mark Merrow's gimmick in wrestling was that he was a boxer. He'd come out, he was a boxer. But the truth was, Mark Merrow was a boxer. And Mark Merrow was doing an interview on Chuck. Somebody asked him, do you think that you could beat Chuck? And they were basically saying, look, Chuck never wrestles. You don't know a lot about wrestling, but you got this striking background. He's got a striking background. Can you outstrike him? It was a silly question. It was a silly question to ask a guy. However, we didn't get a silly answer. We got a real answer, and it surprised everybody. And Mark Merrow said, yeah, I've actually studied Chuck a lot. I thought about fighting him. And he came from a positive perspective. He came from Chuck is the man. But, you know, I used to do some of this. So when I watch his tapes, I, of course, put myself in there. He never tried to say and get over and say he could beat Chuck. But he answered the question nonetheless. And he said, Chuck will never throw a big shot without blinking first. And Chuck has a blink where he might have Tourette's. I don't know that he does. But he has that blink where it's a real strong and powerful one. Can you guys see me even through these glasses? Where it's a big, powerful blanket. It's not just close your eyes. It's kind of a big one. And then he will throw it. But Mark Merrow is the one that told that to the world. And if that impacted the Rashad Evans and the Shogun Ruas and the Rich Franklins, I don't totally know. I can only tell you the timeline. Chuck knocked everybody's ass out that wasn't named Rampage Jackson. Mark Merrow comes out with an interview stating what Chuck's tell was, Chuck quit knocking guys out. And I'm telling you that because Ian Gary does have a couple of tells. Ian Gary is not able to get going. He's not able. Like, if his coach held up the mitts and said, throw a 1-2, he couldn't just throw a 1-2. He can't. His body's not trained. He has to feint you first. He has to. Ian Gary might have the best feints in the sport. They're better than Alex Pierre's. Are you ready for that? Yes, they are. They're better than John Jones's. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Ian Gary's feints. Ian Gary does not throw air balls. He feints. He gets a brief reaction from you. He touches everything that he goes for. There's no wasted energy. I mean, Ian Gary is a freaking handful. He really is. But this is his second meaningful name opponent. MVP is a big name. And Buckley's got the skills. He showed it in his last one. It's a great booking, but it's a massive booking where the UFC, once again, the UFC has only got one brand promise. But son of a gun, they have stuck to it. I have to admit that about them. All sorts of people have marketing, and the UFC is a company, Dana White specifically, has stuck to one promise with you, the audience, which is the best will fight the best. Nobody's protected. And what's best for business is not what we do in this business. It's competition first. I will take any risk, but you will see the best against the best. And he has just stuck to that since 2001. This is a great example of that. I don't think you guys would have predicted this fight. There's one other thing that was a great tell. Buckley just fought not that long ago. Prior to that fight, Ian Garry claimed on social media to be signing a bout agreement. He didn't let us see the name, but he let us turn the pages. So either that was a ruse, which I'm all for, but you got to keep track of these things. So down the road, you know whether you believe everything he says or if he's a bit of an entertainer. Either one's fine. It's a bit of a ruse. They changed his opponent. Or third and highly improbable, Chael remembers it wrong. For Ross came out and he said that Ilya Topuria is going to be the champion of this division for a very long time. For Ross then kind of laid out his case. And my interpretation of the case, if I should just summarize it for you, the knockouts over Volkanovski, the clear and clean knockout over Max, I believe Frost's larger point was just the harder work's already done. Like things aren't going to pick up and get harder, and you don't have that guy floating around the division. That's kind of what Max was, right? I mean, Max left. He goes up to 55. Is he even going to come back? When he does come back, okay, well, this is kind of the boogie monster in the closet. There was a big gap between Volkanovski and Max versus the field. It looked like you could get past Max just by wearing him out, moving him up to 155, and then he comes back. But if I keep looking at the division, I don't know that I see that boogie monster anywhere. And Brian Ortega, just for example, is ranked number 6 in that weight class. But Brian Ortega has shown a real interest in leaving the weight class and going to 55. So there's not a question that the division is dog tough. I just think that for Ross's point, if I interpret it right, is the path that Ilya went to get to the spot that he's in largely has the big heavy hitters in the rear view. Now, I just want to talk about that for a moment. All right, I'm done with my interpretation of what Frost was saying, of which, by the way, I agree with him completely. But I do want to stare at that division a little bit closer. There's something that isn't being discussed is Aljo. Historically speaking, and I think that you guys would fully agree that it makes very good reason and sense. When you have a world champion in one weight classes and he leaves the weight class, he has one fight which must be successful at the new weight class that he goes to. And he comes immediately into a world title fight. Now, this is off the top of my head, but I'm pretty good at these things. Isn't that exactly what happened with Piera? When Izzy took his belt and Piera left and went to 205, didn't he only stop off once? Wasn't that stop off against Jan Blachowicz and then it was right into a world title fight, just for example? Well, Aljo was a world champion. In fact, a record-setting world champion at 135 pounds. And when he left that division and went up to 145, I don't hear his name getting discussed very often, which is just rude. But to remind you, he fought on a big, beautiful, coveted card known as UFC 300, in a big, beautiful, very difficult fight, of which he won. But there was still not talk on the back end of him going for a title. So, why not? And now I believe Aljo even has another fight booked. But I don't hear that fight being discussed as the one for Aljo where he goes into a world title. Maybe we should be talking about that. And it shows, I think, more the strength or where that division's at, because I believe 145, much like 155, to be far and away clearly the most difficult divisions in our sport. And you could have a meaningful argument about which one is harder. But I do think that you will at least come to the conclusion that it's one of them, 45 or 55, for the deepest, scariest talent pool that mixed martial arts has to offer. All right. So I want you thinking about that, because one of the big talking points of this week is what could have been. What could have been with a super fight between Sean O'Malley and Ilya Topuria? How massive that could have been. But the problem with that is we'd have never gotten there. Like, the thing holding up a super fight or a title fight between Topuria and Sean O'Malley is not Merab or Merab getting a decision over Sean or Sean not being the champion. It's none of those things. That is not true. Had Sean won, he and Ilya Topuria would not be fighting. They had not cleaned out their divisions respectively. They would not have even gotten to that fight, which, by the way, is supposedly going to be held in a bull arena in Spain. The UFC doesn't even play Spain. They're looking to go there. They do not have a venue. And I'm only sharing that with you because a lot of you are agreeing with me, going, yes, Chael, you're right. Okay, but if I'm right, you got to understand. If I'm right, but you're also right in that that's the massive fight, we can now make it, and we can make it right now. The thing in the way of Sugar Sean and Ilya Topuria is not Merab in that decision. The thing in the way of it is Sean being the champion at 135. There's nothing historically where Dana would have signed off and brought those guys together this quickly. They can now do that fight. They can do it right now. Just so you understand. If we're in this weird limbo where the obvious number one contender, of which is Diego Lopez, isn't going to get a fight for the belt, somebody else is, in this case, Volkanovski. But now we're hearing rumors of talk about an interim champion or bring them together. Let's go out to Australia. In fact, remove a healthy, unwilling Ilya Topuria. That's the way the story goes. I have a hard time believing that. But the way the story goes is Ilya Topuria is healthy. He is not sick. He is not injured. He is just refusing to fight against Volkan Australia. You can do this dance any way that you want. If the big fight is Sugar Sean and Ilya Topuria, you can make the match right now. The quickest way you're ever going to get Pereira and Aspinall together, or Pereira and John Jones together, the quickest way you're going to do that is not by Pereira continuing to clean out his division. If he continues to clean it out, yes, you could eventually get there, but that road is way longer. If Pereira is to lose at light heavyweight, he's in there with Aspinall and Jones tomorrow. That is how we got Pereira to the 205-pound class to start with. It wasn't by him cleaning house and everything going his way at 185. He got beat at 185. He no longer doesn't represent. He is at the helm of any division. He can change weight classes. And I'm only bringing that to you because it's not a crazy idea. Sean O'Malley has said a lot of things, including, I want a break, including that break's going to be 10 to 12 months, including to taking that back and saying, no, I'm ready to go. I understand all those things, but what if he did? What if he did take 10 or 12 months? But it was 10 or 12 months to get on some size, and he comes right up and challenges Ilya Topuria. I'm just asking you. I don't see that as a smaller fight. I see that as a massive fight. I think it's a big deal. I think it's worth looking at. If Topuria and Sean is the match that ultimately you want to get to, I'm just here to remind you, you could do it right now. And yes, there was a path where they both have belts and you hold everything up and we go out. But not every champ versus champ is a guaranteed home run. Like, as fun as it turned out to be, Volkanovski versus Islam, as great and close and competitive as it turned out to be, that did not move the needle right off the bat. I mean, that needed a little work. It needed a little massaging. It needed a little prompting. Like, you're not guaranteed just because it's champ versus champ. A lot of that is within the fighter's mind. But star versus star, yeah, you bet your ass. Sean O'Malley is not less of a star than he was with that shiny belt over his shoulder. And Sean O'Malley can't go 20 minutes without talking about Ilya Topuria. It's been that way for a while. Sean was the one building Ilya back when you guys knew him as Mr. Hand Sanitizer. Sean was the one talking about, hey, someday this guy, me, Sean goes, he gets his flowers in Miami, and he's talking about Ilya Topuria as opposed to Merab, and what we're now finding out is Nurmagomedov, and at some point in their Sandhagen matters. Like, he's always had his eye on Ilya Topuria. I don't know if there's a backstory. I don't know if there's something personal there. All I know is when you're looking at possible contenders at 145, which looks very thin. It truly does look very thin for as difficult of a division it is. It looks very thin. I'm sharing for you right now, you've actually got them. I don't know why there isn't talk around Aljo. I don't know that. But I know there is talk around Sean O'Malley, who's not holding up a division and has the right to come back anywhere that he wants, including for a title at 145. What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday. And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I am back from beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, where I got to cover UFC 308 right there from headquarters at ESPN. I want to tell you on today's episode, I want to give you my thoughts and remind you what I felt happened. From Cosmet Chimaev's next fight to where the featherweight title goes from here and so much more, guys. No time to waste. Let's start the show. Let me take you guys down an interesting road, and that road is Fighter of the Year. That is when our industry gets together for the World MMA Awards. That is the big one. Do you guys watch music award shows? Do you watch that? They'll have all sorts of stuff, but the final one of the night is simply called Entertainer of the Year. And whoever wins Entertainer of the Year, that's the big one, right? That's the all-around, to put it into a gymnastics term for you. And when you talk about Fighter of the Year, it sure looked as though that was locked up by a man named Alex Pereira. But that's being greatly called into question now by a man named Elia Topuria. And who would you give it to? Now, be real careful. Recency bias, boy, that's a real thing. But the attitude of Pereira has taken him a long way. Pereira's stardom and the goodwill that he's got, not just with you, the audience, but even within the organization UFC itself, does come largely from an attitude that he will fight anybody at any time. And should it arise that he doesn't feel good at the time of a fight that he's already said he will do, he will go out and do it anyway. That'll take you a long way. We just don't know that Topuria doesn't have that same thing. He just wasn't put in the position. I'm talking about Topuria. And if you were to talk about great wins, I went back, guys, before I talked to you today. Featherweight. I looked at who's the number eight guy at featherweight. And the comparison I was planning to make for you guys is because that's what Pereira just did. As amazing as he looked, he went and fought the number eight guy in Roundtree. So what would happen if Ilya did that? And wouldn't you know, the number eight guy is Josh Emmett. And we saw them fight. And it was a very brutal and a very dominant contest. And it looked like two guys that should not be that close to each other in the rankings. It looked like there was some discrepancy, which now we know, as Topuria being the best fighter in the world, there was. So if you look at it from that perspective, both of them have two wins. Both of those wins came by way of stoppage. Both of them dealt with very tough guys, and there was some back and forth. But Topuria, to his credit in this, did have the absolute best guys, which, by the way, is really the closing of a chapter. John Anik, I'm going to take this thought from him, credit to John, who influenced what I'm about to tell you. But John said this right to Daniel Cormier, said, Daniel, let's just use a different weight class, because Topuria wasn't overly well known. I can relate to that. The day I looked him up, my partner Ryan's telling me how to spell his name so I can type it in because I want to see the real name of Mr. Hand Sanitizer. That wasn't that long ago. And I did not know how to spell Ilya or Topuria, let alone to pronounce them, right? It's one of these things of how far he came and how fast he came there. But so did Pereira. Pereira wasn't well known. Pereira was a little bit older. When he came over into the sport, we thought this is an experiment that we've tested all the way back to 1993 with a striker coming over, and he's not going to go and do all that well. So it was a really big surprise, wasn't it? And he took out some top guys. But John Anik told Daniel Cormier that if Pereira had come in, at the time when John Jones and Daniel had separated themselves from the field, everybody knew the two best guys, and then you have the rest of the field. If Pereira would have come in and back-to-back knocked out John Jones and Daniel Cormier, he effectively would have closed the book. It would have ended. He took out an era. He took out the right guys. He took them out easily. And John Anik was just suggesting for Daniel that you look at Ilya Topuria to have done the exact same thing. Except instead of it being mythically and figurative speaking, stopping Volkanovsky and stopping Max ends an entire era of discussion. The chapter is now over. And I think that that is really powerful. I think there's a massive compliment within that analogy. And there's a massive analysis within that explanation. We have a lot of divisions where we rank these guys, but we all know, standing back, whoever gets the opportunity out of those top 10 names that we put up there, whoever gets the opportunity could win the belt on any given night. At 145, there was a very clear gap. They had fought everybody. Everybody had been given their chance. It had been so long. Some guys even left the division. Some guys are talking about leaving the division. But between Volkanovski and the house that he cleaned and the way he did it, I don't think you guys could even off the top of your head tell me rounds that Volkanovski had lost. I know in Volk's last fight with Max, he did not lose any rounds. I don't think you have a whole lot of rounds that you could tell me that Max lost. Like, these guys had really separated themselves. And that's also what Daniel and John had done. And had Piera come in and got them, it would have ended the era. But that's not what's happening with Topuria. We are not ending an era. He does not have these guys in his rear view. He does not get to talk about Fighter of the Year and how exciting this was. And when he closed the book and then these guys, and they've got to climb back. And how are they going to do that? Are they going to face each other? Max has already solved this problem. I don't know if you guys heard this. Max is not going back to 145 pounds. That is official. Max has left the division. Did you guys know that? I might have just broke news for you. Volk, on the other hand, who looked great at 55, who was wildly competitive at 155, is coming to 145 and has been told that he, in fact, is going to get the title shot. He was told this before this fight even happened. We believe him, of course. Not only does Volk always tell us the truth, but he was sitting cage side so he could jump in the ring and do a face-off. And by the way, that wasn't guaranteed to be against Ilya Topuria. That could have been against Max. I don't know what your guys' appetite is to see Volk and Topuria again. But I have a pretty good idea what your appetite is to see Volk versus Max again. And I think if you were to juxtapose that comparison against somebody new like Diego Lopez, you would quickly jump on Diego Lopez. But my entire premise to you that Topuria has shut the book on that era is not true if he is given Volk next. It's also not true if you believe he should be given Volk next. And then you got to think about one step further, guys. What if Volk beats him? What if Volk wins? What do we do then? At least we won't have to revisit the idea of Volk versus Max for the thousandth time because Max has maturely and responsibly taken himself out of the division. But what happens then? You just run him back against Topuria? In an effort to rebuild what once was an undefeated start, to build him back to stardom, you give him that match again? And it's just one of these strange spots where we would be chasing our tail immensely, or we just don't book the fight, which isn't to say that Volk can't work himself back into it. But it was one of the high spots of the entire evening when Volkanovski went in there. He was not called for it. Somehow Volk got access to the stairs. Did you guys see this shot, this camera shot? So there's there's Ilya Topuria, and he's having his moment. His family's there, and they all look beautiful. And then there's Volkanovski at the stairs. So they ask him, they tee it up for this organic moment, and they ask Topuria between Lopez and Volk, who clearly one of them are next. Which one is it? And Topuria starts working. He says, I want to fight them both, to be honest. And he looks over and he sees that Volk is there. And Topuria wasn't trying to create controversy. He was just the opposite. He was trying to celebrate and have a relief from controversy. And Volk comes up. And I believe that and that alone is going to get Volk the title shot. Had Diego Lopez understood what was happening or what time it was, or had somebody with him that could speak English and tell him, get up there. Get up there and get in front of Volk. Don't give him this camera shot because it can't be run wound. And I won't be a hater on that fight. When that gets booked and announced, I won't even tell you that Volk doesn't have a shot. That's not my message now.
But we do have to face with, well, what do we do with Lopez? And do we want to take those kinds of risks? If that's the guy that's supposed to be in there anyway.
What is next for Chimaev? And I feel that that's a bigger question and a bigger talking point even than what happened, right? I mean, we knew going into this, he had a 50% chance of winning that fight. It was either going to be Chimaev or Whitaker, but there wasn't a lot of talk of this being a number one contenders match in regard that whoever wins goes next with Dricus. It was always, to my understanding, a number one contenders match in that whoever wins gets to wait for the outcome of Strickland and Dricus. It had always been that way. And when the performance was done, it really was a wow moment. Robert Whittaker has never had his ass kicked on the ground in the whole career, including 170 pounds and the tournament known as Ultimate Fighter. It's never happened. Robert Whittaker, as a matter of fact, has only had his ass kicked twice in his life. Once by Dricus, which was a big surprise of how good Dricus was, which I think is one of the motivations that Robert Whittaker wants to get back in there with him. I think he feels, hey, that wasn't the best meet. I agree with that. And the first time that Robert Whittaker fought Israel Adesanya, where Izzy was just too quick. The angles were just too much. And yes, I am quoting Robert Whittaker. So we did have this amazing moment. And we saw it was like the world's fastest tap. Dana gets a picture of it, sends that to Daniel while Daniel is still on the air. Daniel shows that photo to the audience, which we heard from the announce team was a dislocated jaw, but that's not what it was. It was the actual teeth. The actual teeth had so much pressure that they got displaced. Looked brutal, looked very painful, looked like somebody would have every right without any kind of embarrassment to having to tap out and surrender in that moment. But because we got all these things that we just didn't think we were going to have, because the only negative talk on Chimaev that you have ever heard is a question on his conditioning for championship rounds, should he get there? So when all of this stuff gets erased, now we've got a narrative of is Chimaev next, meaning not is his next fight for a title, thus wait, that the next time the title's contested, Chimaev should be one half of that, thus bumping Sean Strickland out. Not on my watch. Not on my watch are we going to take that from Sean. Now, Dricus had comment on this, and Dricus was rather polite. He said, I felt bad for Rob Whittaker. And you have that camaraderie, right? Even if Whitaker's coming after him, wants to take his title away, you still have that camaraderie after you fought somebody once. So I took this as very sincere, and I like that Dricus said that. I felt bad for Robert Whittaker. Chimaev sure looked great and looks like a top contender, but right there within that statement, Dricus in no way mentioned Sean or doing that fight immediately and removing Sean. So I went to Strickland, and I asked Strickland, would you give me something that you won't give anybody else? You'd make me look good over here on my YouTube channel. What you tell me, I am going to repeat. If you're not into that, just ignore this whole thing. No, he did write me back. This is Sean Strickland speaking. He said, I am next in line. It has been said, it has been written. Now that's an exact quote. I wish he would have just gone a little bit more with it's been written, meaning does he have a contract? Doesn't say the word contract, but it has been written. After I beat Dricus, then Chimaev can step up. And to the point of Chimaev as a contender, I welcome that after I compete with Dricus. The man, meaning Chimaev, who scammed his fans, became best friends with a murderer, and had to flee his homeland when the leash got too tight. That guy can sit down and wait his turn. Coming from Sean Strickland. All right. Now, I think at a minimum, guys, and I do believe we're going to do this exactly as we've intended. I believe if any of those names I just mentioned, Dricus, Strickland, Chimaev, is to do another fight aside from the title fight, the most likely is Chimaev. And I don't think he's likely to do it. I think he's likely to wait. But I can't imagine a scenario where Chimaev gets that nod and then Sean has to go fight somebody else. It appears that we have two incredible number one contenders. One has the ranking. Oh, and by the way, is completely undefeated. And his last two wins were both over world champions. I'm talking about Chimaev getting the jump on Kamara. Getting the jump on Whitaker. The other is a former world champion who lost the very belt we're talking about in a very controversial manner. One judge didn't think he lost the fight at all, hence the split decision. But a majority of you also thought that Sean had won that fight. So it sounds like we have the right three guys. And it sounds like now we just have a little bit of a waiting process. Does anybody disagree with that strongly? And I know recency bias, and I know how exciting that is. And I know what Chimaev have done, and wow, but we never did get to address the big issue going into this. The big issue that you guys had, I read all of your comments. Chimaev, my own partners at DraftKings had Chimaev as a 2-1 favorite on this, but so many of you were taking Whitaker. And the big question was, can Chimaev hold up and be a threat in championship rounds? But we really didn't get an answer to that, did we? And we might not. If a guy is too good, we can't hold that against him. If guys can't stay in there to be there that long, Chimaev trained for it. He signed the contract to do it. I'm talking about 5 rounds. And he didn't hold any of his energy back. And that was the most impressive thing. Because why you thought, while watching the Kamaru Usman fight, that Chimaev got tired. Why you thought rounds 4 and 5 would be difficult for him. It's not as though he didn't also think that. It's not as though he did not also wonder, can I take this amount of energy I have and can I stretch it for 2 more rounds if I need to? In fact, Chimaev specifically talked to Daniel Cormier privately about this and said, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm aware I'll get exhausted. I'm aware I was exhausted with Kamaru Usman. I'm bringing all my energy right now. I'm going to smash these guys, DC. And then he went out and did that. He did not hold back. An athlete who is not afraid of getting tired acknowledges that he will. Doesn't love that exhausted feeling and state that he's in, but he's not afraid of it. He'll go there anyway. Fedor fit that bill. Fedor loved being exhausted. Dan Gable fits that bill, and I had to go all the way back to 1972. I can't think of a third athlete. But based on what we're seeing from Chimaev and what he's saying, I mean, I'll just remind you, an athlete that is not afraid to get exhausted, oh, by the way, can continue focused on his path while being exhausted, goes on to be a champion. So I do not argue with anybody that say Chimaev's next fight should be for a title. And I don't think we're in the point where we're going to remove Sean and even need to have this discussion. But should we get to that point, that would be wrong. Dricus versus Strickland as planned. Winner versus Chimaev as planned. Unkalaev, boy, that's a handful. Unkalaev is a handful. There's a lot on this. First off, I would like him to get his due. There was a narrative prior to the fight, and hey, Unkalaev, done everything right. You got a great ranking. This is a very difficult opponent. This is a number one contenders match, but you got to look good doing it as a caveat. Now, that's extremely consistent with everything we've ever heard over at the UFC, right? Show, fans come first. I get it. Unkalaev's way of doing that was to put himself at risk and stand up the entire time. Now, I have pled with you guys, as you guys are saying that Unkalaev should be the rightful favorite, as my partners DraftKings have him listed over Pereira himself, because he's a Dagestani wrestler, and that Dagestani wrestling is the hardest thing for a kickboxer like Pereira to deal with. And I've pled with you, letting you know, no, he's not. He's not a wrestler, not according to him. I understand that he can wrestle. I understand that he wrestles a lot, and I understand he's very good at it, but he's not a wrestler. If you went and asked the guy, what are you representing? What sport? Much like Khabib would say Sambo, Unkalaev says kickboxing. That's what he prefers. That's who he ties himself to and he would like to represent in MMA. And you saw that in his fight with Rakic. There was no wrestling. Not a matter of the wrestling failed or it nullified itself. There was no wrestling. Unkalaev at no part, and this was part of his process of bringing his best skills, his favorite skills, but also satisfying the, you must be exciting. There has been a narrative in our sport for the longest time that the most exciting fights are the ones where the guys stand up and bang. And I had no problem with Uncle Elias' fight with Rachik, largely because I understand how good Rachik is. I understand the risk that he was taking. Every movement that Rachik and Uncle Elias had, I'm sitting there and I'm juxtaposing, and I watch him with Brendan Fitzgerald, got Dustin Poirier there, and I'm asking them, guys, are you seeing anything? Dean Thomas, are you guys seeing anything that you believe Pereira would have problems with? And that's the great one we got to tie together, whether he would or not, right? Like, the fight is between those two. We as the audience need to have the imagination. We need to be able to believe that this guy has a skill that this guy can't deal with. It's the art of war. And I think that was not our best version of Uncle Liev. I think that that was a toned down Uncle Liev for the point of attempting to tune himself up. Trying to be more pleasing to watch made him look less threatening. Are you guys with me on that? Because while you were wrong, the narrative out there that Uncle Liev was this great and powerful wrestler that's going to take on a kickboxer, and that story goes back to 1993 and heavily favors the wrestler. While you're accurate about that, you were wrong that he prefers to wrestle. And Uncle Liev did stalk his opponent in Rachik, and he did cut him off. And Rachik is longer, and Rachik will offer hands with a lot of power and legs with a lot of power. And Uncle Liev felt those, but he rolled with it. He took the power off. He managed to fire back. I think that he looked very good. I just think that people miss, including Uncle Liev, I think he misses how much we MMA fans really do like MMA. We don't want to see you laying on the ground doing nothing. That's true, but we don't want to see you on your feet trading shots and parrying and showing techniques. We don't. It's those wow moments. So those are my few thoughts. Uncle Liev deserves a lot of credit. Uncle Liev had so much on his shoulders to not only defeat Rachik, who's a killer, then he was a 3.5, 4-1 at times favorite to do so. So now you don't get any credit if you do it. Now it's expected is my point. And then he's got to look good. He's got to look good. He's got to be exciting, which is a two-man dance. A hard spot for Uncle Liev. And you saw Uncle Liev smile after this fight. It's one of the first times you've ever seen him smile. That was relief. That was relief of everything that he had to go out there and face. So we put Uncle Liev against Pereira. One guy that will insist we do is Pereira. Pereira hears what you say. Pierre does not love the notion that Uncle Liev on a mythical line at DraftKings is the favorite. Oh, and by the way, the only favorite. DraftKings put Uncle Liev mythically against everybody in the top 10. Pierre is favored to beat everybody in the top 10 except Uncle Liev. And if Pierre was to stay at 205 pounds and not face Uncle Liev, I'm telling you right now, the guy that's going to have the biggest problem with that is going to be Pierre. Pierre is not going to let it happen. But I'm not willing to tell you it's going to happen because I don't believe Pereira is staying at 205 pounds. I believe Pereira's next fight will be against Tom Aspinall. I have reason for believing it. I even believe it's going to be sooner than you might think, January. But there's a lot of things that have to happen before we get to that point. The talk of Uncle Liev, Pereira, look, Uncle Liev's the right guy. Welcome back, Rachik would be another thought of mine after that fight. I told you guys all week how good Rachik was. I told you what a threat he was. I told you he can stay in there and go with anybody. Well, he just did with a guy that's basically undefeated and a very clear top-ranked guy. So we had a very good contest. But before we start looking to what's next for Pereira at 205, I'm predicting for you what's next for Pereira is actually at heavyweight. What is next? It is the number one thing that we fans care about. What's next? And we've got such a what's next situation from Saturday that we've tried to answer, and I'm not satisfied with any answer that we've come to. By the way, I mean, let's just go through it right in order. Now, you must understand, I woke up today with what they call the wrong side of the bed. I've woken up on the wrong side of the bed, but I had a great weekend. This was the best UFC of 2024. This was one of the best UFCs of all time. I just don't want to sound when I say that because I amount to recency bias. So I'll just do the year. It was the absolute best UFC. But as far as the storylines go, I don't feel that we have resolved a damn thing. Let's start at 205 pounds, which was designed to find an opponent for Pierre. And you want to know something, the part of the story you weren't told? That would have been a hell of a lot easier to do had Rejcik won. The entire time, that would have been much easier to do if Rejcik won. It was never discussed. It wasn't built into the story. It was a number one contendership for Uncle Live, and a caveat that Uncle Live's got to look good. You want to know what would have solved everything? If Rejcik would have won, he would be the number one contender off to 205. He and Pierre would have a little back and forth right now. But I'm not convinced on Uncle Live. I am convinced on how great Uncle Live is. I am convinced he might be the best 205-pounder in the world. I am convinced that his ranking of number one is correct, and I'm convinced that his contendership and he's darn near an undefeated fighter. Oh, yeah, yeah, I love all of those things. I am not convinced that there was an offering, and not of excitement. I'm not convinced that there was an offering that Uncle Liev may possess a weapon that Pereira can't deal with. And that was what was truly needed. Not just a fun fight. It was truly needed that as I watch you and I imagine that you're in there with Pereira, do you have a tool or a skill that I can then also imagine is going to overwhelm Pereira? Now, I get that that's the fight, guys. I do it, 205 pounds. I get that for the simple reason of there's no one else to go to. Like, no one's that good of a storyteller to tell you a story of how all of these guys are healthy and the champion's not fighting number one. This is a very pro-Uncle Liev piece. I believe Uncle Liev's next fight will be and should be for a world championship. I'm not convinced Pereira is going to be there. I'm not convinced that when Uncle Liev fights next for a title, it's not either going to be a vacated 205-pound belt or an interim belt, because I think that Pereira is moving on. I strongly think that Pereira versus Aspinall is going to be Pereira's next fight. But even if we look at those two, those are our two options. We got Uncle Liev that'll fight Pereira, and Pereira fight Uncle Liev. Wants to, in fact. But you got Aspinall that'll fight Pereira. Pereira fight Aspinall, in fact, wants to. So now you got these two choices. I think you see which one looks to be a little bit clearer. No, stand by on that. That's Chael's theory, but I have a reason that I'm setting that down repeatedly. I'll leave it at that. The only person that'll understand what I just told you is Jesse on Fire. The rest of you, go to Jesse and ask him. Now, let's take a look at Chimaev. Does Chimaev become a number one contender? I would sure think so. But before you tell me and try to stick it in my ear that yes, he absolutely did, and you heard this and you know because somebody told you, I'm just going to remind you to October of last year in a place known as Fight Island. In a number one contendership match between Chimaev and a former world champion named Kamaru Usman. Because Chimaev won that. And he was named the number one contender that night. In fact, he was even offered the fight opposite Sean Strickland. Regardless of how your memory might tell you, Chimaev was actually offered that fight in Vancouver, Canada. And we don't know if it was a matter that Chimaev couldn't catch a plane there. We don't know that. We never got that far. Turned out Chimaev, in the course of the Usman fight, had broken his hand and he couldn't make the date. So we don't know for sure that Chimaev's next. And if he is, what does that mean? Because that can mean two things. And we're very seldomly confronted with this. Hey, you won. Your next fight is for a world championship. Okay, great. But your ears, again, you might be hearing it wrong. That doesn't mean the next time a world championship is fought for at your weight class that you're involved. It just means the next time you fight, it will be for a world championship. And you only get there when you got really good problems. There are really good problems when there are multiple guys and the audience starts bickering back and forth about who should be given the opportunity. As annoying as you might find that, that's when the sport's at its healthiest. That's when a division's at its healthiest. That's when your time as a fan is the most pleasurable. I do not think there is a scenario where they take that shot from Sean Strickland, who won 5 rounds against Paulo Costa, which is a scary opponent. What Chimaev went out and did to Whitaker, surprising and scary, and it's the same words, but who went first and who was given the promise? Like, Chimaev's next fight could be for a championship.
against the winner of Drickus and Strickland. But I think that that's the way that we go. But, again, my entire problem with telling you, we got all these storylines, we got all these things we're going to wrap up, they're going to leapfrog us, so we've got a little clearer vision into tomorrow. It's not a little bit clearer. In fact, it's relatively quite unclear. And I think that we need to change that. I think we need to make that real clear. Strickland versus Duplessis. Chimaev, obvious backup position. Chimaev, if you're going to do anything between now and then, that's up to y'all. But I wouldn't rule out that he's not. I mean, Chimaev was named the number one contender after the Usman fight, and he did something between now and then. So, let's see how that all unfolds. You then go and look at 145 pounds. And this is the one, this is bad business by me. It's bad politics. Don't jump in a fight if you can't win. I can't win this fight, and I'm jumping in it anyway. Okay? It's going to be Volkanovski for multiple reasons. He says he was told. To support the notion that he was told in a conversation that we did it here, he's in the front row, they've done a cameo, and they brought him in the ring for a face-off with Topuria. You can't put the toothpaste back in that tube, all right? It's going to be Volkanovski. I get that. But when you have Topuria, who rolled into town and closed a book on everything that we thought was real, he shut the book on the 145-pound division, put them both behind him. When you do that, to bring Volk in is not appropriate. You're forcing an era and you're forcing nostalgia when we've got to let the story tell itself. And the story is that yesteryear within that division is behind us, but it is not perfectly clear that the new guy is the best guy. It's really not. Topuria and Lopez were both there. Topuria was given his shot, took that crown, and he took it walking away, but Lopez has taken every contender and he smoked them, sending them out the back door. Like, it's really not clear as you might think. Topuria is better than we knew, but is he the best in the world? Well, he's got to fight his guys, and that's where Lopez comes in. I don't love the idea of waiting on that. I don't understand the idea of waiting on that. And much like with Chimaev, are you going to give him something to do in between, or can he just wait? You have that same thing with Lopez. I understand it's going to go to Volk without illness or injury. I do get we just can't unfry that egg, but what do you want to do? You want to also give Lopez something to do? He's a prize fighter. Gets no prize if he's not fighting. You want to have him wait? Is that a reward? Is that a reward to wait? Is that a good thing to wait? I've never wanted to wait. Has anybody ever wanted to wait? Like, it almost feels like a punishment. Your reward is a punishment. And that's the part of the storylines that get a little bit frayed for me. And as wonderful as the UFC it was, in the three ways that I just described for you, it created more problems than it solved. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a shout out to Todd, who left a comment on Spotify. Nobody in combat sports has a better perspective on how a fight is won before the fighters ever even enter the cage. Thank you, Chael, the godfather of head games. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. I'm going to be back for more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having solid teammates and dedicated coaches. It is an absolute necessity to have a team that pushes and challenges day to day in order to continue improving and developing if you want to be a champion. The same goes with your e-commerce business. You need Shopify to be that teammate who helps you get to the top and stay there. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. I've heard it said, success occurs when opportunity meets preparation. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell
wherever your customers are, scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, on a social feed, and anywhere else in between. Upgrade your business today and get the same checkout Bad Guy Inc. uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/chale to level up your selling today. Shopify.com/chale.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Derek Lewis says
Daniel Cormier is a POS.
Derek Lewis says he will not be doing post-fight antics moving forward. Derek Lewis says he's got to keep his pants on because he's recently been going to his children's school and he's not comfortable when classmates ask him if his balls are hot. Derek Lewis says Stipe Miocic will not get out of the first round with John Jones. Now, I got to tell you, those are all very hot topics, and I have missed Derek Lewis. I didn't really realize that I haven't had much Derek in my life until he reemerged with this. And of the Derek Lewis says topics, I am completely uncomfortable discussing each and every one of them, except for the claim he makes that Stipe will not get out of the first round with John Jones. Isn't it interesting? Isn't this interesting? Derek Lewis fought for championships. Two right off the top of my head. Interim championship in his hometown against Ciryl Gane. World Undisputed Championship at the very arena, Madison Square, that Stipe and Jones will be competing. And isn't that interesting that Derek Lewis never crossed paths with Stipe in all this time? And I would love to get the opinion of somebody that's felt them both. I've gone around asking, like doing my own due diligence, trying to find somebody that has felt, practice room counts, that has felt George St. Pierre and felt Khabib. I've been trying to find that common opponent. I haven't done it yet. But I do love when common opponents will bring something to us. And if anybody has the right to an opinion or would know about the pressures that are going to be felt when a heavyweight title is on the line and it's in Madison Square Garden, I think Derek is a good place to start. But boy, he says that Stipe can't get out of one round. I mean, you would be crowning John Jones the GOAT. And I know that argument's out there. I know that it exists. But right now, here today, as I speak to you, he's not ranked as the greatest of this era, let alone of all time. I mean, could you imagine? Somebody gets rid of Stipe like it's nothing? And we've seen Stipe go down. We've seen him get caught. Francis caught him. Francis put him down. It's not as though we're saying that that can't happen, but to do it in the very first round, you never even get going. Stipe, when he's at his best, before you even work fatigue into this, before you work all the negative things that can come in a fight, including a fighter's mind that can start to unravel, or a fighter's eye that can swell shut, or a fighter's nose where he's having a hard time breathing because he's got a broken nose. All those things don't generally happen in the first round, and they don't generally happen by John Jones, and they don't generally happen to a guy that they say is the most successful weight of all time. It's Stipe Miocic. But Derek Lewis says that they will. And I would have a hard time with that. I would have a hard time on any aspect of it. If I were Derek Lewis and I was to say those words, I would have a hard time producing those words. I would stand and defend my division. But one thing that is a reality, very different from a perception, is that bigger is better. That the heavier guys must be the better guys. The heavyweight class is the perennial class, just based on their size alone. And we have found out over time that the smaller guy always has the advantage. The hardest guy to wrestle You can change that wrestle. It's one-on-one combat. You can change that to judo, to boxing, to MMA. But the hardest guy to wrestle is the top guy from one weight class below you. And that doesn't matter if you're the top guy in the weight class that we're discussing. If it was national champ versus national champ, the guy coming up in weight always has the advantage. It's always the hardest guy and historically wins. Now, for Derek to just hand that to John Jones, I couldn't quite tell if he was praising John, which that is very big praise, or if he was questioning Stipe, which would be fair. You have the right to question Stipe just because he's been gone for such a period of time. And I mean, I used to know the stats on this right off the top of my head when it very first started getting talked about, which was for March of last year, which ended up being, no, it was this year, wasn't it? Surreal? Did they fight this year? Or was it a year ago? Jiminy Christmas. I mean, do you see the problem? It was this year. But do you see the problem? Stipe was going to have been gone. At the time they started talking about Stipe versus Jones, Stipe was going to be gone for 3 years, and John Jones will have had fought one time within 4 years. But all the negativity or the lack of experience or the age or the rust coming to bite you in the ass, however, whatever adage you choose to go with, it would apply to both guys, no? If you say, well, Stipe's old, well, but not that much older than John. Like, I won't argue with you if you tell me that Stipe is old by fighter standards. I won't argue with you, but I would argue if you told me that John was young. So it's a big claim by Derek Lewis, and I'm just wondering what you guys think. I mean, let's play that through. Let's make Derek Lewis right, right? Hypothetically, let's make Derek right. How? Do you believe that John can just go take Stipe down whenever he wants? If you do believe that, now that's something that Daniel Cormier couldn't do. Daniel had the better part of 15 rounds to do it. One of the fights, there was two takedowns, and Stipe got them both. I'm just reminding you, do you believe that John, as great as he is with takedowns, can come just take Stipe down? Like, are we talking about a ground and pound and we get him out of here? Like Surreal gone. Ground and pound, move to something, you find a submission, give a guy a window, he takes it. Do you think that Stipe's the kind of guy that would take that? Stipe's the kind of guy that would jump out that window? I'm talking about the window of quitting. It's very hard to get a guy out of there in the first round unless he plays along. At this level, he's got to play along. But Mike Tyson went the better part of a decade with guys that were playing along. They were scared. They were human beings. I understand it. But do you think that's going to happen to Stipe? If you don't, we're left back in the stand-up realm. Do you think that John Jones can knock out Stipe Miocic? I mean, I feel like if I was to twist this for you guys, I had a crystal ball and go, hey, guys, I can't tell you what happened. I didn't see the ending of it, but I met this wizard. He had a crystal ball. And the one thing I do know about the Jones and Stipe fight, they never go to the ground. The whole thing is stand-up. I feel like not only would the line move, it would move in Stipe's favor. Am I wrong about that? Do you believe that John is the better stand-up fighter? And that is the one place where that size does actually come in. That is the one place where the power actually comes in. The whole history in combat, and I brought it to you a moment ago, whether it was judo, wrestling, boxing, or MMA, the whole reason that historically the lighter guy, the guy moving up a weight class has an advantage is in the wrestling component, not in the striking. So if it was to be a stand-up battle, and I'll leave you with one final thought. Do we accept that we know what Stipe is going to look like at this weight? Because don't forget, it's the biggest storyline of the fight, and nobody's telling it, which is when Stipe exited the octagon his last time, which was a world title fight, he fell down and stubbed his toe against Ngannou. That made it 1-1 in Stipe and Ngannou's competitive careers against each other. Stipe believed he was going to go into a trilogy with Ngannou, and Stipe thought, I'm not enough man. I'm not a big enough person. And he worked with his family and he worked with his coaches and he put on that size. Now, Ngannou's gone. Jones is in. And do you really think that size and that power doesn't matter? Because it sure helped Khamzat Chimaev. When Khamzat Chimaev just put some size on, settled in to 185 pounds to where that was the weight that he had to pull down to, and he was never going below that. He wasn't going back down to 170. We did start to see very clearly how good size can be very helpful. And Derek Lewis says that John Jones would get rid of Stipe within the first round. Do you agree with that? Aspinall says he's going to show up.
UFC 309. That's, of course, Jones versus Stipe. He's going to do a few interviews. He's going to cause a scene here or there and hopefully get the winner to fight him. Now, can I tell you what I find interesting about that? So often I will go down the road of conspiracy, and by conspiracy, it's pretty light. I just mean within this sport of MMA and within this company of UFC that they have a plan, and that while they're three steps ahead, they're not revealing that plan to us. They got a little bit to get there, and here's how they're going to shift, and they got a strategy, and I just keep finding it interesting when you see an interview like this one by Tom, that there isn't necessarily that conspiracy-esque strategy being played out and that we're being kept in the dark. Like, the fact that Tom would say, I've got to go and I got to do some media and I got to stir some things up, hoping to get one of them to fight me. It's almost a revelation that there isn't actually a plan. There isn't actually news that's being kept from us. It sounds like Tom, as a regular blue-collar guy, where if he wants to get paid on Friday at 5 before he goes home to the family, has got to go out and do a job. And I wouldn't have thought that that was the case. By the way, I would think that Tom could stay in England. Tom could do whatever he wants, never say a word to anybody. He is the interim champion. They are fighting for the undisputed championship. And this will be real interesting to see how this plays out. Interim champion cannot exist in the presence of an undisputed champion. They are mutually exclusive. It is impossible, as a matter of fact, to have happen, which means the moment the bell rings for Jones versus Stipe, the instant, not the weigh-in, not the lead-up, not the signing of the contract, not the walkout, not the announcement, the moment, by definition, the bell rings, your undisputed champion is now back, which by definition instantly strips Tom Aspinall of an interim championship. And I'm just bringing this to you because it will be very interesting to see if that is what happens. Is Tom Aspinall well aware that when he comes out there with that belt for any interviews that he does moving forward, the moment that bell rings, whoever that is opposite, he is no longer champion. In fact, I know the fans are not aware and the media is not aware to the extent that the fans and the media believe if Stipe is to beat John Jones, I read this article, they laid the whole thing out. If Stipe is to beat John Jones, Stipe is now the undisputed champion. Stipe, if he follows through with his plans, which is an immediate retirement, that no problem. The moment Stipe vacates, it elevates Tom's interim championship to the undisputed championship. That is not true. There would be no championship to elevate. Tom, by the time Stipe wins the belt, there is no longer an interim champion. But the media has ran with this story. And the other side of it, if John were to win, and then John were to do what none of us believe he's going to do, but he has teased a couple times, which is to retire, you would again have a vacated undisputed championship, which many believe just elevates Tom's interim belt to an undisputed belt. But it doesn't. There's not an interim belt to elevate. It is not the conclusion of the fight. It is not the result of a fight. I don't know how to speak any clearer. The moment the bell rings, starting the fight, Tom is no longer a champion. And that doesn't totally sound fair to have a champion, but he loses it for actions that aren't of his own. It's the definition, though. And I'm bringing this to you guys ahead of time because as correct as I am, and I am, I couldn't bet my house that's what's going to happen. We will fiercely adhere to the rules that we make up as we go. And I'm just keeping my eye on that. I'm just wondering, what is it that Tom needs to do? But you would think that Tom would be in pole position. You would think that Tom can stay in England. Tom can do nothing. Tom is the interim champion. Of course, he's going to face whoever has the undisputed belt. But just to correct you, no, he won't be. He cannot just stay home. He cannot just sit this one out. It does not automatically default to Tom. Where as an interim champion, at a minimum, we understand he's a number one contender. He will no longer be the interim champion. So if Tom stays home, sits this one out, doesn't come, doesn't stir the pot, doesn't get things going and rev them up, if he does that, he's going to be looked at as a contender like the rest of them.
who possibly gets the nod and possibly doesn't. And it doesn't matter how obvious he is as a number one contender. I was in Salt Lake three weeks ago. The number one contender obviously was Uncle Liev, but it was Khalil in there doing the heavy lifting. And I just, on a personal note, I like that Tom's coming out, by the way. I like that he's going to stir it up. I like that he's hoping to get in with the winner. But I think it does help to reveal for us, like, there's not a great thing going on behind the scenes that we don't see. I was just with Michael Chandler 1 week ago in Florida. And in visiting with Michael Chandler, it did become very obvious, like, what Chandler and Connor had going and when that fight was going to happen or if it's going to happen or if it's still going to happen. One thing that was very obvious through my visits with Michael Chandler is there is not a plan that hasn't been revealed to us, the audience. There isn't something that these guys, the fighter themselves or the promotion, they got this little plan and there's not. It really does come down to what Dana White constantly says, which is, let's see what happens. So I'm curious. I don't feel whole here. I don't feel complete. Tom doing an interview and stating he plans to come out and do interviews and stir some stuff up is a little bit contrary to what we were told a month ago, which is Tom is the backup fighter. It would be redundant for Tom to have to reveal to a media member that he was coming to New York. That would be redundant. If he is, in fact, a signed backup fighter, as we've been told that he is, of course he's going to be in New York. He might even be fighting. In fact, his plan would be to fight. He'd be through training camp. He'd be ready. He's going to have to weigh in. He's going to have to go through the medical process and get licensed. And perhaps have to step into the ring. He would be planning on doing that. That's the way that you would have to look at it as a backup fighter. That is the thing that you would be hoping and praying for. It would not be planning to do interviews to get a future fight. I'm just sharing with you, like, there's a little bit of tug of war here. And I don't want to see Tom stripped, by the way, but I didn't love seeing Colby Covington get stripped. Colby Covington was a number one contender who couldn't fight for the belt, who was an interim champion who never lost, woke up one day and wasn't the interim champion, fought the reigning BMF champion and won and didn't become the BMF champion. Like, when I explain to you what happened to Colby, it's like a riddle. It's, you think I'm playing word games, but I'm not. And it is interesting. Tom defended an interim title. That was interesting. I think it was the right thing to do. When I tell you we make up things as we go, well, we make them up in an attempt to get them better in a sport that's very new. But it is really, really important that we either change the name of the interim title or we look up the definition, which by proxy would immediately vacate when the bell rings and you have the return of the undisputed champion. But I'm not 100% sure in telling you, even though I am 100% confident in the linguistics of it, I'm not positive to tell you that's what's going to happen. Paul Tyson, you know, this is a fight. I remember where I was when this got announced. I was sitting and I was doing PBD's podcast and I was having a great time. PBD brings this up. And so he turns to me, Chael, what do you think of this? And I remember what I thought of it. I did not believe it. As a matter of fact, there was a number of days, and I had to call this out. I had to call this out to get clarity for all of us, but I will take the credit for getting clarity. They were using a word, and I believe it was box. I believe, like, everywhere you said, or it's just showing them together. I'm trying to go off my memory here, but I'm starting to get it. There'd be all these posters of Tyson and Paul and Netflix, and there was a date. And I mean, when was that supposed to be, guys? Was that supposed to be summer? July? Is that what it was supposed to be? And it got moved. But they never said what they were going to do. And it never used the word fight, or it never used the word box. It never said compete. It just kept showing them both. And I remember that was my reaction. But then I noticed it when ESPN.com picked it up. When it got picked up by SportsIllustrated.com, I'm reading those. I'm going, okay, but look, ESPN, the worldwide leader, and Sports Illustrated, neither one of them is saying fight, box, compete. It is showing Tyson and Paul. And I brought that out, and the marketing team and the PR team over there quickly corrected that. Okay, great, but now we have our clarity. But I'm just sharing with you, it was so unbelievable that I did not believe it. And I thought that I even cracked the code. Hey, you're all suckers. Well, it's being confirmed by ESPN. Well, not really. You got a graphic, two guys, big faces, and you have an advertisement for a company, but we're the ones saying what they're going to go and do. So, wrong. It was just a miss. It was just a miss by the PR team that put it out. Thought that everybody would know. But that's how unbelievable it was. Then they were going to do Dallas. They were going to do Jerry's World, which is really unbelievable. You cannot get 80,000 people to come watch that. It wouldn't matter if you gave tickets away. It wouldn't matter if you do a 2-for-1 or a Groupon or bring a can of soup and the kids get in free. 80,000 people are not going to that pain of an ass of an arena for one match, particularly when it's this match, particularly when it's aired on television. It simply isn't going to happen. That's not just a prediction that I felt back then when this got announced, which was in March. It wasn't just that. I'm telling you right now, they're not getting 80,000 people. This arena is the biggest pain in the ass of an arena I have ever set foot in, and I live going to arenas. And it's not like Dallas is some big fight capital, and it's not like Tyson or Paul are from Dallas and have some kind of tie into this. It's none of those things, which just, I'm sharing with you, giving you my timeline, added to where this was just silly. And it's going to have to be backed up by a massive card and or co-main event. None of those things happened. But all of a sudden, this fight isn't quite so silly. And they haven't changed it. Like, one thing that they really needed to change this story was training footage of Mike Tyson. And it could have been anything. He could have done a run and they clock it, but they show you that he did it in, you know, he ran a mile in 8 minutes. That'd be a very fast time for somebody in Tyson shape. He could have been in the weight room and he's repping, got 315 on the bar and he's pumping. Like, it could be anything. Sparring and focus mitts would be our favorite. The speed bag, the heavy bag, you can look real good. You could be doing a jump rope session and we'll judge him by the heart rate and the sweat and how his feet are looking like that. It could be damn near anything. We never got that. In fact, we got training footage from a fight that he did a number of years ago that they tried to pass off as current footage. And so this was a negative. This was going to be a black eye. In fact, somewhere along the way, Tyson even pulled out for medical issues and somehow got relicensed and sent back in there. Paul got a full training camp, a trip, a weigh-in, and a match in between. Like, I mean, these things are greatly favoring Jake Paul, but not all of those things happen, and the fight does feel different, doesn't it? These guys have done a very good job. And a lot of people say that Michael Jordan is the most famous athlete alive, or that Michael Jordan is the most recognizable. I don't think that's true. And I wouldn't be able to prove that, but I believe it's Mike Tyson. And if there was some way to do it, I can tell you, my database, I'll take my son's third grade class, who have heard of Michael Jordan because of the shoe, but couldn't pick him out of a crowd, and know exactly who Mike Tyson is. And I've been around them both. And you do feel something when you're around Tyson. You do. So, is that all it is? Is that the secret? Some promoter was smart enough to just get Iron Mike. If one guy can cover the spread, it's him. Because if he's so beloved, it's not helpful that he's an underdog. It's not helpful that he's supposed to lose. That's not what you want to see with your beloved player. So there was a number of things that were against this fight. I'm just sharing that with you, but I'm sharing it as praise to the fight. They have made it work. I've been invited. Coach Decanter invited me over to watch it. He's having a party. I haven't been invited to a fight party. I can't remember last time I was invited to a fight party. Last fight parties I have been to, the last 10 years, I threw them. I can't remember being invited to a fight party. Big deal. Just one example. But Jake Paul is very unique in the things that he does. He just is. He has a different set of skills, and he brought that set of skills. Here's what he did today, guys. I was blown away. I was just blown away by the creativeness of this. From a performance art standpoint, like, Jake and his brother work. And one of the reasons they work is Logan is big brother, and Jake is to a point where he's not crazy about that. Like, I am a legit badass doing legit dangerous things, and you're a very tough guy too, but you're doing the performance.
I should be the one that's viewed, but Logan won't let him have it. That's Logan's little brother. And it comes through. And it's cool. It's a cool dynamic between these two. They go do a lie detector test. Did you see this? This was brilliant.
There's not another word for it. In the world of marketing, this was outstanding. So it's not just Jake Paul has to take a lie detector test, which they're going to ask him, do you think you can beat him? Can you only beat him because of age? Is this a rigged fight where you went and found an older guy with a big name? Now, I'm changing some of the questions, but this was the topic. This is exactly what they asked him, just not verbatim like that. Now,
it went both ways. They put Logan Paul. They hooked him up to the machine
to ask him as my brother, as my closest confidant, as my supporter, my corner man. Do you think I can beat him?
It was very interesting. It was, and Jake Paul, by the way,
Jake Paul failed. He has an anxiety. He has an emotion, something that was picked up by this machine. I'm taking for granted that it was an accurate machine. Don't think you have to tell me there's theater here, but I do think it was an accurate machine. I just don't think those guys, as good of performers as they are, I don't think they're that good of actors. I think they really went and did a machine and lived with the result. And Jake Paul said that he does not believe that Tyson's age is a factor. That he believes Tyson to be a threat at all times, regardless of the age.
And they then asked him if he's confident that he's going to beat him. And he did not pass that. And I just think that's interesting. And I also think that's believable. I am also much younger than Mike Tyson. And I was to a letter of intent phase of fighting Mike Tyson. Supposed to go to, like, it was like some rooftop in Saudi Arabia. It was this whole thing. But I remember how I felt inside. I was signing it. And I was doing my part. And I was excited. That's Mike Tyson. This is going to be a thing. I ended up foxing with Anderson Silva instead. But I'm just sharing with you, from a very personal standpoint, I didn't think about his age. I told Coach Clayton, say, can I beat this guy? Same question I asked Clayton before every fight. He said, of course, champ. This guy's 55 years old. But it didn't give me a lot of confidence, I must tell you. I still see him as a certain way. And I know how important the approach is. And if Jake Paul also views Tyson in that way, I think that's very respectful. I think that lets us into the mindset of Jake Paul. But I also think, if you guys are accepting this at face value, and I encourage you to, I believe it was a real lie detector test, I encourage you to look at Jake Paul differently. Because if he's fighting an older Mike Tyson and it doesn't matter and that guy's not the threat and he's younger and he's just going to win, and that's what the odds makers say. That's what you guys betting with your money and parting with it with my partners DraftKings say, 2.5 to 1 favorite. But if he doesn't see it that way, then you cannot look at him from a perspective that he's trying to do something easy or he's only taking it because it's easy. Even if those things turn out in hindsight to be true, if he doesn't believe them, so he's got that anxiety, he's got that fear, he sees himself as the one that's going to be hurt and going to be hunted, and he's signing up and agreeing for it anyway, that in and of itself makes him a different guy and a different competitor than maybe we were all aware. I think the lie detector was brilliant. I think this fight is getting more and more interesting. I hope that Mike agrees. I hope Mike Tyson takes the same polygraph.
All right, just for fun, guys, right? We got the big election coming up. So if I had to, and I got asked this by Troy. Troy said, hey, Chael, if you had to take a UFC fighter and make them president, who would it be? And very interesting. I would assume that Stipe would win the election. If I had to make one of them the president, what is I'm looking for? And there's not a lot of fighters that you could turn to, okay? I mean, just so you understand, like, it is a very dirty business. And it's not completely the fighter's fault, by the way, but by the time he gets spit out the other end, he generally had some mentors or a coach or a manager or two that were lying to him or stealing from him. I mean, it's one of these things where he's got a teammate that was chasing his girl, and all of a sudden you're brought into this culture, and by the time you make it, you're a polished up star that's getting TV time. You've been in it at least a decade. Well, you've been in a really dirty thing for a decade. It's one of these things. Khabib would have the qualities and traits if I had to make somebody president. If Khabib tells you something, that is the way it is. And you really can't get around that. It's very, very tough to get around the honor, the integrity that somebody has when their word is good, period. But Khabib was not born of United States nationality. So I'm assuming that he would be disqualified. I couldn't put Khabib in. And now I'm trying to answer this real honest, right? I'm trying to answer this real serious. Who do I think could win? And I would tell you, if it was overall fighter, who is the most popular? Because it's a popularity contest. It never goes away. When I run for governor of Oregon, it will be no different than when I ran for class president of Miss Juris's homeroom in the fifth grade. It's just a popularity contest. Do the kids like me more than they like the other kids that ran against me? It's yes or no. I lost the thing 3 times before I won it. Like, I do understand both sides of it, but it is nothing more than popularity. Somebody will then hide behind policies and issues to try to look sophisticated and try to show some type of virtue. It's just a popularity contest. They do a number of polls that really have a significance. One of them is most attractive. You got the two folks running for president, there will be who is more attractive. That person wins, the person that wins that poll, it's one the president, was it 93%? They just showed this on TV, was it 93%? But 100%, they will do a poll. Who would you rather have a beer with? Would you rather have a beer with Barack Obama or Mitt Romney? But that one is 100% since they started doing it, and they've done it for like 60 years. That one is 100%, which just proves my point of the popularity. And if it did come down to that, it would go to Renzo Gracie. Renzo Gracie is the most popular fighter amongst fighters. And you know who else would do very well? Daniel Cormier. If we had to make one fighter the president, Daniel Cormier just might be the president of the United States. And we had a guy that could have been. We had a guy that would have been right there in the running. He's out of Georgia. He's a military hero. He's now a CEO of a multi-billion dollar company. This guy was an ace. His name was Brian Stann. I even made a push for that. Brian Stann has been voted for twice. I voted for him in 2008 and 2012. I wrote his name in both times. That is verifiable. So many people think that voting is private. No, it's 100% confirmable by anybody. Now, you won't know which way they voted. Got a little inside help, but you 100% can know if they voted. So, which is something that so many people don't realize. And I only laugh. I'm laughing. I'm picturing Ben Affleck in my head. Ben Affleck had done this huge special. You got to get out and vote, man. You got to vote. You got to make your voice heard. He did this whole thing on TV and he was the host of it. And they went and looked him up and he had never voted. I don't even think he was registered, but he thought that was private. He didn't know that that was public, that you just had to go to a .com within the county. Very, very funny thing. I was in a back and forth on Twitter last night, more out of a confusion. Like, when you hear people, hey, get out there and vote. You got to vote. You got to be heard. Every vote counts. Like, the ridiculousness, the insincerity, and the lack of math done by the author of those statements is insane. There was no formula you could get out. You got your calculator. You got where just everybody go and vote. If you got a disinterested person that didn't follow along, what are you encouraging him to vote for? Unless he's your buddy and he'll follow along and you can get him to vote the way that you want him to vote. Why would you encourage him to vote? Like, let's say I fall. Here's what my dad used to do to my mom. And this is very funny. My mom was more into politics and what was going on in our community than my father was. So my father, they would vote together. And my father, 100% of his life, married to this woman 30 years,
whoever she voted for and whatever she voted for on any measure or initiative, he would vote the opposite so that her vote didn't count. He would cancel her out.
And he would do that purely because he didn't want to hear about it. He didn't want her coming home talking about this and telling him that she wants to host and this politician's coming over and we got to donate some money to this and we got to read this pamphlet. He would cancel her out so that all of that work that he believed to be largely nonsense didn't matter. He would just cancel her out. I'm sorry. I lost my father, but that's a funny story. And that's a funny thing to do. My dad was playing blackjack one time. He was in $500 a hand. My dad was a plumber like that. That was a week's pay. And my mom came over and was upset that he was playing. She did something. Oh, you know what she did? She came up to the table and she put her hand and she took his chips. That's what she did. She took all his chips so he could not double down or play another hand. She wanted to talk about these $500 hands. So he took his two cards that were crap. It was like a 5 and an 8. I was saying it was like a 5 and a 3. I think it totaled 8. He stood on it. He didn't hit. He didn't hit on an 8 with $500 out there to spite my mother who came over and didn't want him losing money. It was funny. That's funny. All right. Now, I share that with you. We had a guy, Brian Stan. Brian Stan was out of Georgia. And they had a plan in Georgia. It was a light plan. They were talking to different people, but to run Brian for the Senate. Now, the hard part in Georgia would be to make it out of your primary. But if you made it out of your primary, he would have won the seat. And I do believe he could have been as light as a one-term senator. And which Barack Obama was, just for example. J.D. Vance, just for example. And I believe they would have ran him for the presidency. And I was making a push for that. I'd be doing interviews and talking about that. I was like trying to get him involved. I have never spoke to him about it. I don't have know if he had any idea that he had the skill sets needed. But if I was the president, because you always get asked this one, right? Who would be the president? But then you get asked what you would do. And that just means for the sport, what you would do. And I would really only have one thing that I could, you could never do like this. The business does not work the way I'm going to say. But if I had a wish, if I had like this mythical wish, I wish we would recognize a forfeit. I came from the world of wrestling and we did. Two guys agree at a specific time, they're going to step on a mat under a agreed rule set at an agreed upon weight class. And when that day came, if one guy did not step on the mat, the other guy still did. He still went through the process. He still walked in front of the crowd. He still put his uniform on. He still walked to the middle. He still got his hand raised. The team still got the points. So whether you think that's silly or you think that makes good sense, I'm just sharing for you. It's what I came from. And we do not have a sport full of cowards that I have ever seen like MMA. I have never seen more fake tough guys. Let's give you a perspective, guys. But the Super Bowl for this coming season, the Super Bowl, the kickoff time and the location and the date is set. If one team doesn't show up for whatever reason, we will crown somebody Super Bowl champion on the agreed upon kickoff time. Next year's or season's Super Bowl, the one after that, and the one after that, 4 are all set. The Olympics for 2028 in Los Angeles is not set yet, but it will be very soon. It will be set years in advance. And if any athlete doesn't want to step onto the sand or onto the court or onto the surface or in the arena or onto the mat, and the other person does, they will be recognized as champion. It will be a forfeit, which is what it should be. And in this sport, you see where that stops business dead in its tracks. You got 3 forfeits in one night and they're all your main card. I get that you can't do this. I do truly understand that. But you could to a degree. It should affect rankings. If 2 guys agree to fight and 1 guy doesn't show up to the fight, it doesn't matter what the reason is. It's an open concession. I cannot beat you. It's an open concession. I can't make weight.
It's an open concession. Because I was not able to prepare, I cannot make weight, and I cannot beat you, and therefore I will not compete with you. Well, that's what this whole thing is about. Who's tougher at an agreed-upon time? You know, you guys would love a redo or a restart or 20 more minutes. It doesn't work that way. They'll ask you in the back. I used to get asked this all the time. Are you ready? No, no. And you don't have to keep asking me because I'll never be ready. But at some point, it will be my turn. And when that time comes, I will put my mouthpiece in. And when my music hits those speakers, I will make that walk. And if you don't live by that code, LeBron does. LeBron tougher than you cage fighters? There's not a team that comes out. LeBron wants to sit down and renegotiate. Schedule gets drawn ahead of time. Once they agree to bring their team, they can switch them on the spot. He doesn't sit down and renegotiate, tell you this is a new guy. I wasn't planning to play against this guard or forward. It doesn't work that way. Serena never did that. Mayweather never did that. Tiger Woods never did that. These guys are wimps, or they're supposed to be. But they show up in an agreed upon time and fighters don't. And there should be a penalty and you should pay for that. And it shouldn't be done with heart. I understand we want to show people grace and we want to lift them, right? When a man's down, you don't kick him, you help him up. I understand that. And a lot of times these fights are missed due to illness or injury. That's very tough stuff. In fact, there's nothing more tough than that. That's his health. It can't be done that way. It can't be done with heart. Because it is completely about who can get there on the agreed upon date, at an agreed upon weight, at an agreed upon skill set. That's why it is organized professional sport, not a street fight. That's the big difference. A street fight is spontaneous. You don't have to sleep on it. You don't have to dwell on it. It happens right now. You got a courage and bravery in that moment, right then. Fight or flight, right then. This is the difference. It's not right then. You're staring at your clock. Right? You got to meet that guy behind the barn at 3 o'clock. It's one of those things, but that is quite literally the difference. Brian Stan, if he still qualifies, and I think he does, and if I was the president, that would be the rule I'd put in place. Troy, you're welcome. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening, and a shout out to Joe, who left a review on Apple Podcasts that says, Uncle Jail, your perspective on fighting pushes against every narrative mainstream MMA media can muster. Thank you, Joe. I do appreciate that. And you know what, guys? I'm going to be back on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.